This episode of the Butane by ABIC podcast is brought to you by the Aesthetic and Beauty Industry Council. Hello and welcome to the Butane by ABIC podcast, your online support community for the aesthetic and beauty industry. Here, we are strengthening and unifying the industry through representation, innovation, and education. This is a platform created and dedicated to the aesthetic and beauty industry, valuing unity and advancement. We serve to represent, support, and inspire you by connecting you with industry experts, expanding your knowledge through educational pieces, and bringing you the latest industry news. This is Butane by ABIC. Welcome to the Butane by ABIC podcast. I'm your host, Stephanie Miller, and today's guest is Linda McCallery-Smith from the Victorian Small Business Commission. Linda commenced her role as the Victorian Business Commissioner in August 2021. Linda is a qualified lawyer and an accomplished senior executive with extensive experience working with businesses within Victoria and nationally. Linda was most recently Executive Director of Regulatory Operations with the Victorian Building Authority, following her time with the National Workplace Regulator, where she held a variety of senior executive roles, including leading the Fair Work Ombudsman's small business strategy to better help small business operators navigate their workplace rights and obligations. Linda and the team at the Victorian Small Business Commission are dedicated to providing much-needed support to Victorian small businesses. To share her tips and strategies when it comes to resolving commercial disputes, from the Victorian Small Business Commission, today we welcome Linda McCallery-Smith. Hello and welcome to the podcast, Linda.
Thanks so much for having me, Steph. It's great to be with you today.
And it is such a pleasure and privilege having you today because you are the Victorian Small Business Commissioner, a very lofty and important role. Can you please tell us how you came to be in this role?
Thanks so much, Steph. It's such a privilege to be in the role helping the Victorian small businesses. And we've got around 650,000 small businesses in Victoria, and they range in size from individuals operating their own business right through to having a number of employees as well. So it's a huge privilege to be in the role and supporting our small businesses through what's been a really hard time the last couple of years.
Sure has.
Some tricky times ahead, but lots of exciting stuff happening in the small business space as well. So it's I was delighted to be appointed to the role. I think there's never been a more important time for small businesses to be front and centre across government in decision making and for that small business perspective to be heard loud and clear. And there's a lot of small businesses out there in Victoria. I think we here at the Victorian Small Business Commission that we can actually help. So delighted to be rolling up our sleeves and diving in.
And you actually started your career in law. You're a lawyer, aren't you, Linda?
That's right. Don't hold it against me. But yes, I was in a previous life. I was a lawyer. I worked in commercial litigation. So I sort of had seen earlier on in my career sort of the impact and impost on businesses in going down right through the litigation side of things, irrespective of whether or not you were the one starting litigation or you were the one sort of defending it as well. So and then I moved into regulation of businesses and workplaces predominantly for too many years to count, Steph. I think in terms of owning up, and then it was such a brilliant opportunity to step into this role.
And you took this role because you have a special interest in actually helping to resolve problems and disputes that happen between business owners that probably can't afford to go all the way to litigation. Tell us a little bit about what you do daily.
Absolutely. And I think it's one of the really, really tricky things for small businesses about having a bit more of a level playing field, if you like, when they do come up against problems. So a big chunk of the work that we do here at the Commission is providing low-cost dispute resolution. And so effectively what that means is you can, if you're a small business, and we don't have any definition, if you consider yourself to be a small business, that's good enough for us. There's only been a couple of a couple of people who or organizations who've come to us that hasn't kind of passed the pub test that we've encouraged to go and get help elsewhere. But generally speaking, if you're a small business, that's good enough for you. Consider yourself a small business. We're delighted to help. So core part of the service that we provide is if you do have a dispute, and that could be pretty much with anybody except for a retail consumer. And if you're in a situation with perhaps having a dispute with another business, could be with government, your local council, could be with state government, federal government, what have you, we're here to actually help. So for $195 per party, we provide independent mediation by an accredited mediator. But even before you get to that point, you can actually access our early dispute resolution services entirely for free. And so of the businesses that come to us, Steph, with problems and say, look, I've got this dispute and I can't resolve it and I don't know the way forward, around 40% of those get resolved totally for free by our really experienced dispute resolution officers who listen to the small business, hear their story, get across the issue, and then act sort of as a circuit breaker, I guess, in the middle between the small business and whoever they're in dispute with, which is often another small business as well, and sort of as that circuit breaker, independent, cool head in the middle, 40% get resolved through that way, which is effectively through phone calls and some emails using some really skilled expertise around dispute resolution. But if that can't get resolved at that point, the small business is really welcome to request a formal mediation with us, which we've been doing virtually through COVID, and actually to great success, I would say, where the parties are actually, the feedback we're getting really strongly is that small businesses and whoever they're having issues with really appreciate the opportunity to be able to do it by video conferencing, as opposed to having to, you know, trek into an office to come in and do it face to face. So, and that's $195 per party. And if you end up, if one of your members ends up accessing that formal mediation, usually over 80% of those get resolved. So if you think about those numbers, if you 40% get resolved really early on, of those that don't and go on to mediation, 80% of those get resolved at mediation. So if one of your members has a dispute and they come to us, the odds are very much in their favour. They'll walk away with the dispute resolved.
They're impressive results and statistics for sure. You must employ some pretty dynamite strategies to get those results. Can you share some strategies that our industry, because it's predominantly made up of small businesses, very small businesses, some of them, you know, working solo operators even, and that would be considered a small business, wouldn't it, if you're a solo operator and you have your own premises?
Absolutely, absolutely. And I think sort of, you know, one of the challenges when you are in some kind of dispute or you've got some kind of issue is you don't, as a small business operator, you don't have time to sort this sort of stuff out. It can be quite emotionally draining, particularly if you're having a dispute with someone else that you've had a really good business relationship with or that's really important to your business. So it might be one that maybe you're not necessarily had a long-standing relationship, but it's a really important either because they're supplying products you really need, or it could be with your landlord, and you know you don't want to be having a contested relationship with your landlord if you can avoid it. So some of the one of the things that we can really offer is taking some of that pressure off the business. So dispute resolution can be a very you know, there are a lot of skills and expertise that can be deployed to try and help. So we're really keen to sort of share the message of what are the kind of things that small businesses can do themselves in order to be able to avoid dispute in the first place or resolve them pretty quickly, and then otherwise where we can jump in and sort of use our expertise. So one of the core things that we focus on when people do come to us is empowering the parties so that they are part of the resolution. And that's one of the big downsides about going to court or off to a tribunal is that the end outcome is entirely out of your control. Someone else is deciding that for you, and either you win or you lose. And even if you win, often you don't get exactly what you needed, or you're carrying costs. You're very rare would you have all your costs covered. So usually even if you do have a win, you're left out of pocket. But what we see so much also is the mental health burden and the stress that that takes the pressure that comes to bear on small business operators if they do go down that path. It's hard enough at running a small business at the best of times. Like, you don't go into running a small business, Steph, because you want an easy life, do you?
That's for sure.
You go into it because, you know, in your space too, your members are passionate about providing care and that, you know, supporting people in terms of how they can look and feel the best in terms of their life as well too. So that's the kind of thing that usually we see as a fire in the belly, and then running a business kind of needs to happen in parallel to whatever is that passion that the person has. So it's okay for small business operators to go, you know what, this isn't actually my particular strength, or I haven't come across this before. So some of the things that we really work with small businesses on is supporting them around, look, what is the best outcome? And one of the challenges I think that everybody's navigating in the current state of the world is you might have a really great contract where everybody's terms that you've agreed to purchase something or some services, everybody might have gone into it with all good intentions to deliver, but then just because of the current uncertainty within Australia and around the world, sometimes, you know, you might have ordered some supplies, but your supplier just physically can't get them into the country, for example, or you might have agreed to provide some services in some kind of contracting arrangement, and maybe your ability to do that is impacted by you can't find the right staff or the staff with the right skills. So one of the things we're working with a lot of businesses on at the moment is accepting the reality of the circumstances as they are at the moment, which can be really hard. And then how can we find some kind of middle ground that I won't say that everybody would be happy with, but that the both parties could tolerate? What's a pragmatic outcome? Because we are seeing a number of instances at the moment where the parties have perfect contracts. It's really clear what the entitlements and obligations are, but they just actually can't be, those expectations can't be met or can't be delivered right now. So we're trying to move parties to, okay, what's your pragmatic next best outcome for this? And one of the things we really try to do is ensure that the parties, because they have to agree, we can't force a decision on people. So each party has to agree to what the outcome is. And one of the things we see that is a bit of a gift of this kind of approach is that then you own the outcome, and that some of the negative feelings you can carry forward when you feel like you've had an outcome foisted on you is, you know, within a situation that maybe is not ideal to start with, you feel like you can take back a little bit more of control of what the outcome is than maybe you might otherwise have had. So, and probably if I think about what's the biggest superpower that my staff have, would be listening skills, listening, because a huge part of this is empathy. And that goes to both sides of the equation. So whoever's put their hand up and said, hey, we need our help, we need your help to support us in this dispute with this other business or organisation. And it's really being able to listen to both sides, being independent in the way that we do that, and trying to stand in people's shoes. So some of what my staff do really well, I think, is be able to be a conduit to share the other party's perspective with one party, because sometimes, particularly when you're in a dispute, there's a lot of emotions that come into that, and sometimes it can be hard to sort of see through that, to kind of stand in the other person's shoes. But sometimes, or often, the way to finding a pathway forward is to understanding the other person's position and them understanding yours, so then you can kind of go, okay, well, how can we move forward with this?
I love, Linda, that you said that the superpower is listening, because I do think that's the only place you can start when it comes to dispute resolution. If you don't hear, and this is why I feel this is where maybe we go wrong as business owners, you're absolutely right. We're very passionate about what we do, and we're passionate about the outcome that we want to get. And a lot of time is spent giving our point of view rather than maybe just taking a beat and listening to the other side. And I think that's the very first step. Look, tell us some strategies. Let's get right into it. Give us some strategies, I suppose, beforehand that businesses can adopt to actually help them avoid getting into a dispute in the first place.
Oh, it's such a great point, because there are some strategies that you can put in place to sort of minimize. It won't always mean you don't have any, but even if you do, you're in a pretty good spot. So one thing would be, when you're thinking about who you're having commercial relationships with, and that goes to be it your landlord, or if it goes to suppliers or what have you, where you can, an alignment of values and goals, so that you're seeing the mutual benefit sort of through a similar lens. So if you're finding if you're finding a landlord or a supplier or contractor really difficult to deal with, or not as timely with their communication, for example, before you've even put pen to paper, so to speak, well, that might be an indicator that, well, how's this relationship going to pan out over the course? Do you have an environment where you feel you can ask open questions, you can raise concerns, you can raise issues, and the other party is not going to get upset by that? So I think if you can ideally have a relationship where you can identify that there's a commitment with the other party to wanting to form a lasting relationship, if that's appropriate to the transaction you're sort of talking about. So if, for example, one of your members is wanting to step into a new part of sort of the industry, so to speak, and that's really dependent on bringing in a particular type of expertise to be able to do that, or access to particular materials or products, if you like, well, then if you're going to start advertising in your business that, now, wow, we provide this amazing new service, you'd sort of want the confidence sitting behind that you've got that continuity of supply, for example. You wouldn't want to go out and advertise and then find out, oh, well, okay, we've made an agreement with someone who can only deliver once, and now we've made all these promises to our customers, or they've come in and gone, that's amazing, we want more of it, and then you can't actually deliver on that. So being clear about what kind of relationship you want, and that you're seeing things through this from the similar perspective, mutual interests. So, and that then comes down to also the type of relationship that you have and the people that you're dealing with. So the ability to understand the other person or the other business's perspective, that it's not a win or lose mentality, and communication is absolutely critical, that it's open and it's transparent, and that you're communicating early and often. So if there's a problem, putting your hand up really quickly and calling that out, and doing that in a really constructive way. And sometimes I see in industries which are really people-centred, which, Steph, like, that's at the core of all of your members, like, passionate for people, and they would get a lot of energy from servicing their customers and the great outcomes and things that you get. Sometimes that when you're then going into a space where your expectations maybe in a business context aren't being met, is about being able to have that cool head and go, okay, how do I communicate this really constructively, even if I'm dealing with someone who's not communicating with me in the way that I'd like to be communicated, how do I raise issues in a really respectful and constructive way? And other things around is accountability. So depending on the nature of what sort of transaction or relationship you're going into, just that it's really clear what the obligations or responsibilities are and who's responsible for those. So some examples, which might sound a little bit twee, but I've heard worked really well for a lot of small businesses, is if you're signing a contract, going through a contract and even getting out different colour highlighters, or, you know, if you're doing it online, doing the similar version and highlighting what are your obligations in one colour, and what are the other person's or the other business's obligations on the other. So you're really clear about what you're promising and what they're promising to you too. A pre-agreed dispute resolution is something that kind of gets forgotten. So before things go pear-shaped, have a think about what will you do if an issue comes up. And it is so much easier to agree when everything feels good, when both parties are feeling positive about the relationship, to sit down and go, okay, so look, if there is an issue that comes up, how are we going to agree to deal with that? Like, what's our process or practice? So we're encouraging people, if it's something that they think works for them, to actually build into their contracts alternative dispute resolution. It doesn't have to be fancy clauses. You can even say that, look, before either of you would march off to court, for example, that you'd agree to come and have a mediation with us, or be mediated in some other form if that's what you preferred. But sort of actually specifying that, because It's so much easier to agree to that when not an issue is not on the table and when everyone's in that positive wanting to make it happen mode. Whereas if you're silent on that, it seems a lot more controversial and contested for you to bring it up down the track as well.
Yes.
So, and writing, it's, I know it's really boring, but putting it in writing and not relying on oral assurances as well too, and being careful around if there are things in writing and then someone else is saying, oh, don't worry about that. I know it says that, but we'll agree to do X, Y, and Z. Mm-hmm. Well, there should be no reason why anyone should hesitate to put stuff in writing, and making objective, not emotional decisions and getting advice is really important. So one thing I'd share, particularly with your members, Steph, is we see, unfortunately, too often small businesses who are stepping out maybe for the first time and leasing premises, but they haven't spoken. So they sign the lease, which has significant financial commitments, usually around for 5 years. And sometimes they haven't actually spoken to the council yet to find out, are they allowed to run their type of business in that particular location? So we've seen examples where small businesses have signed up to leases and it's not the use that they want to use the business, the premises for, is simply not allowed by council. And the landlord's then saying, well, look, I've got a contract. You entered into it. You should have done your research. Council's saying, I'm sorry, we can't budge on this because of X, Y, and Z reasons, which are very good. We just can't allow you that particular type of business here. And the poor small business person been excited and a little bit, you know, probably caught up in the passion of the moment. So just to take your time and take advice. So Steph, this is, you know, I constantly spruik membership. And I know I'm talking today to the converted, but I just, you know, that every dollar you spend on member of an industry association or a chamber, you get back so many folds. It's so worth it because you get people who understand your industry. So if in doubt, reach out and ask questions before you commit to things.
Absolutely. And you know what? You're actually not preaching just to the converted, because our podcast goes out to thousands upon thousands of people and actually is international. So if anybody's listening to this, even if you're not in Australia and you know, haven't got the opportunity to sign up to the Aesthetic and Beauty Industry Council in your country, you will have an equivalent. And that's, you know, it is the holy grail, signing up to an organization that can give you that support and that knows people like Linda who we know who to steer you towards to actually get the answers. And goodness me, those strategies that you've given, they're not just they're not just simple little strategies. I've taken a lot of notes, Linda.
and I think it's a big part of what I think we can share too. Like, we have a lot of expertise, but we want to share that expertise. So hopefully we can have small businesses who yes. You know, can duck and weave from having a dispute, but then if they do, can help, you know, resolve it themselves. But know that if not, they can come to us. And yeah, so if you're not a member of an association, please look into it, because I think there's never been a greater time where industry specific advice and support is really of great value as well.
The Aesthetic and Beauty Industry Council is Australia's peak industry body, representing the collective professional beauty and aesthetic, salon, clinic and spa community. Created for the industry, by the industry, our council is a collaboration of industry leaders who bring their commitment and specialised skills to raise industry standards, guide regulation, and be a strong voice to government. At ABIC, our purpose is to provide an accessible and supportive organisation for the betterment of the professional beauty and aesthetic field, to enhance working practices and promote unity across the various sectors of the industry. ABIC's mission also includes being a trusted source of referral, education and guidance for clients of the beauty and aesthetic profession. ABIC is here to support our members through an extensive offering, including hundreds of valuable resources, HR support and industry expert facilitators to ensure your continued growth and success. Join us today and together let's safeguard the future of the beauty and aesthetic industry. Find us at www.theabic.org.au. At ABIC, we are here for you.
let's just say, which does happen, businesses are in difficult situations. They emerge in your workplace. Maybe there's a disagreement with your supplier. How can the business then start to de-escalate that?
Yes, look, it's a great question. And one of the first things I'd say is try and keep a check on the emotions, which is easier said than done, of course.
Much easier.
Yeah, of course, and particularly if you think the other party has done the wrong thing by you as well. So one of the things it's a bit like the digital version of, you know, type the email but don't send it. Like, you know, in the olden days, write the letter and stick it in your bottom drawer.
Right.
So pick the moment. So pick them up, like be really thoughtful about how you resolve an issue, and that goes to not only the way in which you do that but the timing of that. So if, for example, you know you're going to have a difficult conversation with someone else about an issue that's come up, don't do it when you're feeling stressed if you can avoid it. Don't do it when you're running between appointments or commitments. Don't do it when you're under pressure. Be in the right environment if you can at all manage that, sort of in a quiet, safe space. Have made some notes around what are the kind of key messages you want to get across as well. So this stuff is important to say too, Steph, like this stuff doesn't come naturally. So there's no deficiency if people need to really prepare for these conversations. It's actually a really, really good idea. And this is kind of some of the core stuff that my staff do as well, but sort of get yourself in the right head frame. It's always good having a couple of lines in your back pocket, I guess, if you like to, about what's your exit strategy if you know, be it a phone call or a conversation's going a bit haywire, because you can obviously can control how you respond, but you can't control how the other party responds. So even if you're able to keep your emotions in check, maybe the other party isn't, or maybe, you know, you've called them at a really bad time and then they're just responding in a really hot-tempered kind of way. So I think being really alive to, is the continuing this conversation right now, is this productive? Is this a constructive use of our time? So, and having a, you know, exiting stage left if you need to. If you're calling, if you raise an issue with someone else and then they completely, you know, overreact, so to speak, well, okay, I can hear that you're upset right now. I've shared with you how I'm feeling. Let's end the call now and let's make a time to come back and have a conversation, or I'll give you a couple of days to think about it. I'll call you back, that kind of stuff. So I think, you know, that humane aspect that comes in from as well, like picking up on the emotions and the responses of the other party. Now, there obviously comes a point too where sometimes the other party, you can kind of go, oh, they're having a bit of a lend in the way that they're behaving, and this is a bit of a strategy, and then you probably, it's an opportunity to be a bit firmer at that point. But I think making sure you're in the right headspace before you have that conversation, sticking really clearly to facts, being really thoughtful about the language that you use as well, and knowing that the other party might find the issue that you're raising really, really challenging to hear, and it might be coming out of the blue to them. They might feel that they might feel attacked from their integrity perspective. So I think it's factoring all that kind of stuff in and gaming it out, and then it's okay. You know, great idea to have some pre-prepared notes if you need to, and then you can kind of, you know, read it off in a natural kind of way, so it sounds a bit conversational if you're doing it over the phone. But there's no harm in preparing for these conversations, because otherwise, you know, we often come in kind of after these conversations maybe haven't gone as well as they could have, and maybe things have been said that in hindsight weren't maybe helpful, or, you know, things just came out of people's mouths that they didn't, you know, in hindsight shouldn't have been said, but they did in the heat of the moment. So a big part of what we do in our dispute resolution, either my staff or our mediators, is they give the parties a time to talk about how they're feeling so that the other party can feel heard and validated, because there's always two sides to every story. And I think what we've learned over the last couple of years especially is there's so much going on in everyone's life all the time, not only in everyone's individual businesses, but in their broader personal contexts and stuff. So, you know, when you're ready to raise the issue with them, maybe is there other stuff going on in their environment that remains, they respond in a certain way. So you need to kind of park it and then come back to it again at another time as well. So
yes,
taking notes is a good idea too around when you do have these conversations. So if you know, if you're by email or what have you, that kind of sorts itself out. But if you are calling to talk to people and you are trying to, you know, resolve these sorts of things, keeping diary notes of the contacts that you are making can really help. And that can help if you do end up sort of ultimately down in a, you do decide to go onto a tribunal or some other court, or even in terms of that helps our dispute resolution team to sort of cut through some of the things where if one party says, oh, well, I would have paid it if only they had asked me to pay it. Sometimes we can say, oh, well, actually, we understood they spoke to you on this date and this date and this date and sent you an email on this date and this date. Sometimes that can kind of really sharpen the other party's focus on, oh, okay, I better address this because they've got the full picture.
Good point. And so these are amazing things that you've given. There was one thing that I wanted to ask. When you're usually in a dispute, sometimes you're asked questions and your first response is to answer those questions on the spot, even if you're not 100% confident. Is it okay to say, look, I don't have an answer for you right now. Can I get back to you?
Yeah, absolutely. There's absolutely. The other party might not like it, but that doesn't mean you need to go ahead and answer it anyway. And there might be sometimes where you're getting asked a question that you want to double check. Either you're not sure you want to double check, or maybe you sort of know the answer, but you want to be really thoughtful about how you frame up your response. So absolutely to say, oh, look, I just need to check that with you, or I, you know, I've heard the question that you've asked. I promise I'll come back to you. Some of the things that would help is sort of a, if you are saying I'll take that away, I don't want to answer it now effectively, is to commit to when you will come back.
Invasive.
Yeah, that's right. Because otherwise, yeah, if you're ducking and weaving a question, and then, you know, if you can say, oh, look, I can't answer that right now, but what I will do is I'll talk to my team and I'll come back to you tomorrow. Or my team, the person I need to talk to is away right now. They're back next week. So I'll talk to them on Monday and I'll give you a call on Tuesday or something like that. And then if there's obstacles to you meeting commitments that you've made when you're trying to sort out these issues, just keeping people up to speed. So, you know, if you plan to come back to people and say, oh, I'll come back to you by the end of the week, and then you can't, it's a good idea to, you know, shoot off a quick email or a short note just to say, yeah, look, sorry, there's been a delay. I haven't forgotten. I am coming back to you. Because in the absence of that, what we see, people just get more upset. Like if they feel like the other side's stonewalling them, they'll start to assume the worst of the other side and assume that, well, they're deliberately not responding and they're, you know, dodging answering questions, what have you. Whereas if there's genuine reasons sharing that, because the number one thing, Steph, that indicates whether or not parties can resolve a matter through alternative dispute resolution that we've seen is often that the parties are still talking to each other.
Right.
Doesn't mean that they're necessarily saying nice things to each other, but there's still clear lines of communication. When one side totally disengages, it's a lot harder for the business then to bring that to resolution.
No, absolutely, absolutely.
We sometimes find quite often, even if a party has disengaged, when we become involved as an independent government agency, that can kind of be a bit of a shock to, okay, I've got to no more head in the sand about this or playing games. Now's the time to actually engage in it because this has gotten a bit real and serious as well.
And I think that does happen when you're under stress and pressure, you know, going past the arguing part of it and really sticking your head in the sand and go, I just can't deal with this right now, and just being really evasive and not dealing with it. So I think the best thing is, you're right, it's hard sometimes, but to continue to communicate, I think that's the only way to make steps towards resolving the matter. Let's just say you have taken every step that you can think of to resolve this matter. It's just not working. What's the next step that a business owner can take then?
So if the business is located in Victoria, they can absolutely reach out to us. If they are within Australia, there's other equivalents in most of the other states and territories as well that you can find, and I'm sure internationally as well there'll be other sort of similar services. So what you can do is reach out to us in the first instance. So you can contact us either at our website at vsbc.vic.gov.au, or we've got a 1300 number where you can call and talk to someone, which is 138722. So what would happen then is you put in a, and you can do a dispute application online. So if you're wanting a bit of tips and tricks about how to approach stuff, you give us a call by all means. If you've kind of been through all those processes and you're sort of like, okay, now I need some, a bit more of the informal help, we've got a new self-help portal, which has just been launched that people can access to go in and request help. So you can go in, set up your own account, and then shoot through a request for help through there. And our dedicated team can actually communicate with you through that secure portal. So you can feel really confident with any information you provide through that portal, be it even commercially sensitive information and the like. There's really tight security parameters around that. So don't hesitate to share what you need to share with us. So what then would happen would be one of our dispute resolution officers would receive that and they would make contact and touch base and usually tell us a bit more about your story or confirm details of the other party or contact details or the like. Sometimes you won't have all the information that about the other side, if you like, that you have. So conversations sometimes with our staff can help sort of tease that out. My crew would talk with you through around, okay, well, what does a good outcome potentially look like? Why do you think the other party might be behaving like this? And that's part of the starting to think about thinking in the other person's shoes. And then we would provide a copy of the dispute application and any other relevant information to the other side. And we would say, look, this small business has contacted us, they've raised a dispute and we'd like you to respond to it. And then we give them sort of a formal requirement to respond to us. And so usually then from there, it's via email or telephone calls sort of, because usually they'll have their own perspective and their side of the story to share. And usually there's a whole range of different factors going on. It's very rare for it to be completely black and white. That's when the sort of the skilled dispute resolution staff kind of earn their money, if you like, who come in and having listened to both sides can kind of share the differing perspectives and start to tease through questions about, it could be about differing responsibilities. In Victoria recently there was the Commercial Tenancy Relief Scheme, which put obligations on landlords to provide certain types of tenancy relief to tenants who were doing it significantly hard through COVID. So as an example of that, so we were dealing with a number of disputes from tenants where landlords were refusing to believe that they were obliged to provide this relief. So then our dispute resolution officers were able to go, well, yes, actually, this is what the law says. Here's the information. Go and have a look at it. Like, no, the tenant's not making this up. This is effectively what the requirements are. And then sometimes for the person who's on the receiving end of a dispute, hearing it from an independent voice can sometimes help, because if the relationship's a bit fraught, you might be thinking, well, I don't necessarily believe what the business is telling me. But then to have an independent government representative say, well, this is kind of the way it is, that can help. And so then the idea then is creative solutions. So talking to both sides about what does an outcome look like, and moving away from just an enforcement of rights, but really focusing on the goal of all of these conversations are around resolving the dispute, not about proving that one party is right or wrong, focusing very much on that dispute resolution side. So, and as I said, over 40% of matters get resolved with my staff sort of going between the two parties to try and to broker some common understanding and some common ideas for options to resolve the matter. And then if that's not successful at that point, it then gets referred to one of our specialist independent mediators. And we're doing most of our mediations all online at the moment, unless there's...
Yes, tell us about that. That's, yeah. I think I may have, I have went through online mediation myself with one of my landlords, and I think it might have been through your office, but it was a game changer. Tell us a little bit about what the structure is, how do you reach a fair outcome through that process?
And Steph, it's been such an amazing journey for us, because like everybody, we've been trying different things to deal with the pandemic and learning along the way. And if you'd said to us 3 years ago that we thought online mediation was as good as or superior to face-to-face, we would have told you you were dreaming. But we overnight we had to change from doing face-to-face mediations to doing them all online, predominantly through video, but sometimes telephone if people's internet is a challenge. And amazing. So we did some research recently.
You're more comfortable too, like sitting in your own home, in your own environment. I know that if I had to actually go somewhere to have that mediation, it probably wouldn't have turned out as well as it did.
Yeah, absolutely. It's not as scary. You don't have to worry about getting into a building you've never been before. If temperatures are a bit hot between the parties too, which they often are by the time we get involved, you're not having to sit in a room looking at the person who you feel's done you wrong and they're not glaring at you, and even some of the representative behaviour that sometimes we would see with, you know, sometimes tending a little towards bombastic with some representatives. But that's more, dare I say it, that's much easier to manage in a virtual environment. So the feedback from our mediators came through really strongly that they felt actually equalised. It equalised a lot of those things and it allowed them to manage some behaviours. So if one party, for example, was, you know, behaving in a way that wasn't so appropriate, virtually you can just suck them out of the general room and put them into a breakout room to talk to them, whereas it's a lot different physically trying to do that. So the results were outstanding. Like, and so there's some instances where we are still offering face-to-face where it's required. So if a circumstance really does benefit from face-to-face, we'll absolutely still do that. But the idea now is that you'd have a contact with your mediator before the mediation session so that you can, so that's just with you, so all your and your representative, if you want to have someone or a support person, that's fine too, but it's not with the other party. So the idea is that they can reach out to you and, you know, build a little bit of rapport so that you can appreciate that what their role is and that you can trust them and they can sort of share their perspective and their approach. And then they would always do that with the other side as well. And then actually on the day, so you sign an agreement beforehand. So this is part of the thing that everyone's coming into it, not to focus on arguing about their rights, but hopefully to focus their attention on, right, we're coming together today to focus on trying to resolve this dispute. And the focus is very much dispute resolution, not winning and losing. And so then you jump into the virtual room, the mediator would, so the other party would be there and in the virtual space, and the mediator will talk through the process, set up the ground rules sort of for behaviours and things. And they'll also have virtual breakout rooms. So you'll still have a private space where you can talk to your representative away from the mediator and also the other party. And then what would happen then is you usually have joint session to start with where each party explains their story and their perspective. So they've got a chance to share that. And then the other party listens to that. And then people would usually then move into breakout rooms and the mediator would start to say, oh, okay, well, so now that you've heard that, does this impact? What do you think? This kind of stuff. At the moment, with a lot of issues we're dealing with around unpaid supplier invoices or things not delivered in the way that they should have been, often there's quite a bit of discussions around the financials, around, you know, how much can you concede, what's realistic here, if payment plans are being agreed to, okay, what's a realistic payment plan as well. And then so the mediator kind of jumps like a rabbit between the two different breakout rooms, and then we'll bring the group back together again. And sometimes they'll do this multiple times, so you'll have a group session, a separate session, then back into the group. The idea being to try and get the parties
moving. I think that's completely essential. You know, you can I think that's one thing that I didn't really get in my mediation, so I can see what you're talking about now. It's that's essential, gosh, to give everybody sort of a bit of a time out as well, and have them think about really what do they want without the pressure of having the other party there in front of you.
That's right. And because the mediator's independent as well, so they're all fabulously qualified, nationally accredited mediators who specialise in business mediation. So they themselves are small business operators themselves. So they very much get it. They get the content and the expertise of the subject matter of what you're dealing with. We try to make sure we match mediators up to mediators who have an understanding of the background of the legal framework, even, you know, if they're not lawyers themselves. And they're not there to give legal advice, but they just get, they kind of get the context, so to speak. And then the benefit of parties hearing from an independent person, and going to the example earlier about rent relief, there's been many times when mediators have it's been powerful for a mediator to be able to say to a tenant or a landlord, no, you're either not entitled to that or you're obligated to provide that. So just that ability to kind of cut through, and you're not feeling like it's the other side spinning you a line, but it's an independent person who's saying, look, this is the way the system operates. I know you might not like it, but this is the reality that we find ourselves in. So how do we move forward? And often when the mediators get everyone together, it's pretty rare for it to be singular dispute. What often we see is there might be one thing which is the main dispute, but then other stuff gets hung on to that as well. Sort of it might be, well, you haven't paid this invoice, but you know what, the last couple of things that you had delivered or I had received weren't up to scratch. So often these things bring out surface a whole lot of bubbling issues.
In context, I suppose, yeah. That's right. And then the dispute becomes this is how the situation's led up to this, you know, because you're right, oftentimes it's not just one particular thing, or it can be one thing but then spurred on also by multiple other things. Goodness, we could talk to you about this all day, and you are so knowledgeable, Linda, in every aspect. I've taken copious amounts of notes, but do you have any step-by-step material on how to resolve disputes up until we go to online mediation? Because it's a no-brainer. If you're at the point where it's not going any further, I would say go straight to Linda and her team. If you're not in Victoria, then you go to your dispute resolution services in your, you know, in the country that you're in or in the state that you're in. But for all those steps beforehand, do you have any material for to share with people?
We do. We've got heaps of information on our website on vsbc.vic.gov.au. Nice. So we've got fact sheets, we've got guides, we've got case studies, we've got it by theme. For example, we've got some information available on getting paid on time. We've got materials available around is your contract fair. Some questions. We've got some material also around some of the trickier things around should you close your business as well. There's a whole heap, and that we've got a whole heap of things around leasing as well too. But, and there's some specific stuff covered off what we've covered off today around tips to help you resolve a dispute before you go to mediation as well too. So including letters of demand and things like that. So definitely encourage everyone to jump on and have a look. And just, Steph, one thing I'd just share too is just as part of this is this kind of stuff is hard, and it's hard at the best of times to be having a dispute kind of weighing you down when you're running a business, never mind in the middle of a pandemic as we sort of navigate our way through. So it's okay to say that you're struggling in this regard, and there's some great mental health supports that are available, particularly for small businesses, because small businesses, COVID's been tough for everybody, but small businesses have had it super tough in terms of trying to navigate the surviving their business. If they employ staff, worrying about can they keep their staff on. Your industry, Steph, obviously so impacted with lockdowns and the like as well. So there's some great material available on our website. In fact, there's a guide we've developed with Beyond Blue for a small business operator creating a mental health action plan for themselves. And there's also some really good mental health resources that are available through business.vic.gov.au. So I would say to listeners out there, if you are struggling a bit at the moment, you're not the only one, and there is no shame in putting your hand up and saying, you know what, I need a little bit of help here. And what we see with small businesses is it's, you know, your family is all involved usually as well.
Oh, so yes, absolutely.
If you're worrying about how you're paying your business bills, it's really hard sometimes to come home and talk about that in a family context, and maybe you feel that you can't, or little ears are at home, you don't want kids to be worrying about money and all this kind of stuff. So there are some great supports that are out available there that are free of charge and that are available and tailored specifically for small businesses. So if you jump onto our website or give us a call, or jump onto business.vic.gov.au, and wherever you are in Australia or around the world, there'll be similar resources available. So don't hesitate to reach out to those as well.
Absolutely. And I know that people in other states have actually gone in to the big website and taken some tips from your website as well, because they really are universal, aren't they?
Absolutely. It doesn't, you know, this is, it all goes to human behavior, and it goes to, you know, running a business, and irrespective of what particular laws might apply around any particular issue, sort of dispute resolution and tips for managing issues in business are, there's a lot we can learn from each other and share.
Well, thank you so much, Linda. You are just, you know, a treasure to everybody who runs a small business, because I know myself, I run small businesses, and everybody listening mostly does. And it's so wonderful knowing that we have people that just care and are so dedicated to what they do in helping us get through this. So thank you so much for your time and everything you do, Linda.
Oh, thanks, Steph, and thank you. Thank you to you and for your amazing advocacy and all the support you and your team have provided, not only to your members but industry-wide as well. And a massive shout-out to your industry as well, in terms of the strength that you've shown over the last couple of years. And you have only my good wishes and best wishes moving forward to continue to grow and strengthen your businesses.
Thank you, Linda. Please join us again, okay?
Thanks so much, Steph.
You've reached the end of another episode of the Beauté by ABIC podcast, your online support community for the aesthetic and beauty industry. Thank you for listening, and until next time, stay connected.